When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome in to another episode of Hockey Royalty Live, the official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. We are coming at you after the road split, getting into the matchups here. What was good? What was bad? Hey, disappointment on special teams. How do we feel going forward? Is there going to be a change in net? So get in the chat, like, and subscribe. Let's get into it. How are you doing, co-host here? Russell Joe, how you doing?
Doing pretty good. I mean, I don't know if the high of last night has necessarily worn off. I'm still kind of feeling it. I know after the low of game one, the next day, it's just, I don't even want to think about hockey. And then, but yeah, I mean, last night, the way it ended and kind of the feeling that a lot of Kings fans, I'm sure, feel the same way. It's just, it feels good. It feels good. It's one of the few good feelings that I've had about this team probably all year or a long time at least. So it was good to get that one. How are you feeling, Joe?
The ebbs and flows of playoff hockey, the game-to-game heart attack. Don't we all miss it, right? other than that, I'll be honest, I'm pretty tired. But we're here. We're going to battle through this. Randon, how you doing?
Well, I'm still getting used to having no intro. I just set up an intro and then didn't have an intro. Working on it. We're having some, actually some bands, maybe drop some stuff, some custom stuff for Hockey Royalty. So that stuff's in the works. We might have to do like a little makeshift one because I was ready to press the button just out of habit and it wasn't there. Tyrion Arnold out of Alabama goes to Detroit here with pick number 24. Watching the draft, the Niners pick in, what is that, six or seven? So I'm glued there, but I'm glued here. You know, you're gonna have. I'm a multitasker. You know, you gotta scan the field like our goalies, and hopefully, I don't let in too many pucks. But I just think I'm doing all right. I mean, I was up 3-1, and my mom was like, "Oh, the Kings are playing good." And then my girl texted me like, "Oh, you guys are winning," and I was like, "Just hold my beer real quick. You know, like just give it a second. You know, just like Texas weather. If you don't like the weather, just wait 5 minutes because the game." Changes that quickly from the first period to the third period where we score and you think that that might be a chance for us to settle in the 1-3-1, they answer right back. So let's get into it. I mean, obviously in the pregame for game two, Joe and I kind of gave our thoughts on how the team played after game one. Russ, it's good to have you in here for the third opinion. I'll let you get first shot here. Instead of starting off, make it, let's start off positive because we won the game. What are the positives going into game three? How do you like the way the Kings answered in game two?
I mean, I really like the way that they've been playing, or they at least played 5-on-5 in game two. Special teams is still an issue. We'll talk about that. But, I mean, in a game that, or after a game where it felt like everything went wrong and everything went right for the Oilers, you kind of needed your big guys and your big guns and your leaders to step up in game two. And that's exactly what happened. So you could see it right off the bat. Like Kopitar was just engaged and on a man on a mission. Same thing with Kempe. Those two looked great right off. So that was good to see. And then I guess you wanted to see a little bit better goaltending. We'll talk about that too. It wasn't that great, but yeah, 5-on-5, I thought they looked pretty good. And I mean, McDavid's going to do McDavid things. That's, we all know that. I mean, we don't really need to dive too far into that. He's the best player on the planet for a reason.
If you didn't know that, ESPN will tell you.
Yeah, that's for sure. But what's been really good to see is that they've actually done a pretty good job, and I think it's mostly been Kopitar and Kempe and I think Byfield on the other side most of the time. They've done a good job at shutting down Drysdale, which has been really good to see. He hasn't really done much 5-on-5. A lot of his numbers haven't been that great. He's still a great player, obviously. So, but the fact that if you can limit a lot of what he can produce and really make them focus a lot of their production from McDavid, I mean, that's huge if you're a Kings fan, if you're a Kings man or a coach too. So to see that and to see them kind of neutralize the kind of clog up the neutral zone a little bit more in game two, kind of got back to Kings hockey a little bit. I think there's still a little bit more room for improvement in that area. But yeah, after a really, really bad game one, to come out with the victory in game two, that was huge.
Joe, did obviously we were talking about how bad the team looked, and it was just not a very good vote of confidence. And we said we needed big players to make plays, and you said your player of the game, and who I was going to pick too. If the Kings were going to win, the player of the game was going to be Adrian Kempe, and boy, did he show up early.
Yeah, and I think in part because what got the Kings back to playing kind of the way that they play. The Kings are a team that score goals and create their chances off the rush. They are not a team that's going to wear you down on a cycle, make creative plays in the offensive zone, make plays to the slot. That we've talked about that at length on this show. That just really isn't how they operate, especially under Jim Hiller. They don't make a lot of plays to the high danger areas and create high danger chances. So if the Kings are going to be successful at 5-on-5 in this series, it's going to be in transition. It's going to be off the rush. They got back to that in the second game. Cause game one, I don't know. Did you guys remember much off the rush? It didn't happen. And you look at the goals they scored, let's be honest. They were flukes. I mean, Mikey Anderson's slapper through traffic, okay, that finds it. But two of the goals bounce off a guy. The other one, CC's stick explodes. The Kings, quote-unquote, scored four goals in that game. But there was a lot of breaks that went their way. But that shifted in game two very much so, right? I mean, the first two Kempe goals. I mean, the first goal wasn't directly off a rush, but they create a turnover, quick strike and transition. You know, the second one, turnover. Kempe leads the rush, moves it to Kopitar. Bang, they strike in transition, right? Doughty's goal, a strike in transition. The Kopitar game winner. Like, that is how the Kings are going to beat them. And we talked about that, I think, in the leading up to the series. Like, the Kings can't miss off the rush. They have to score on their chances off the rush. That's how they're going to do it. And that's how they can survive in this series. And they did that in game two. So that game, and that said, it's not as if they were, like, badly hemmed in that game. Like Russ said, that was a good game. And if you look at like shot attempts and expected goals, they've now played 15 games in a row against the Oilers, right, over the last three seasons in the playoffs. That game last night was one of their top two or three in terms of like expected goals and shot attempts. So the Kings, they brought it in game two, and that was a relief to see, because almost anything less than that, and they'd be down 0-2. So it was good to see.
Yeah, the big players make plays, and that's what you need in the playoffs. Edmonton's been getting it constantly for the last two or three seasons. Doughty made some good plays. Byfield with the chip in for the game winner. Kopitar showed up when he needed to be. Kempe shows why he led the team in points this season. Big players make plays when you need it, and the Kings had to have those to go back home into LA 1-1. I really think that this team still hasn't found the magic that has been earlier this season, but they are finding ways to win, and they have to win off the rush. They have to have – when they counterpunch, they have to hit the jaw. They can't leave themselves open when they go for the haymaker, and scoring those points is a big deal. What has also been a big deal is the delusion that our penalty kill could stop what is going on the other side. So let's get into the special teams, because that was a major point for all of us. And the penalty kill has been horrible. And I don't know if it's just the fact that the Edmonton Oilers know what we're going to do, if they're just vastly superior talent-wise or a combination of both. But it has not looked good. By the way, pick 25 to the Packers tackled Jordan Morgan out of Arizona. Anyways, Russ.
I have no idea who that is.
Russ, obviously we were hoping for some sort of life out of the penalty kill. Have not gotten it. What have you seen on the special teams?
Yeah, I think, to be honest with you, the penalty kill is not what's so frustrating. It's the power play. But, I mean, just to kind of touch on the penalty kill, it's everything we kind of expected from the Kings and what's been their strategy all year. Is they've played this kind of diamond where they have this one guy down low. They're going to give the puck carrier that one-on-one chance with the goalie. But when that guy with the puck is Connor McDavid, it makes it a little bit more difficult to defend that play. And he's been in the game one, he was able to find Zach Hyman on the back door a couple times. And then Draisaitl with his patented one-timer on the other side. So, I mean, those are tough, obviously, saves for Cam Talbot. But in game two, I think they did a little bit better job. I thought Edmonton just kind of adjusted on the fly and was able to find Zach Hyman a little bit higher, a little bit further away from that backdoor spot that he usually sits in. So it's just kind of like a punch, counterpunch, kind of like you said, Ren. It's like you have one team that's adjusting and then the Oilers are adjusting. It's like now how are the Kings going to adjust? Because, I mean, besides just one power play goal, I thought the penalty kill was 1-for-3. You leave him at 33%, I guess you can take that as a win. But it's just – I think what's so frustrating, too, is we're still seeing these, like, unnecessary penalties that the Kings are taking that they just don't need to be taking. I mean, the Matt Roy delay game, it is what it is.
That's bad luck.
Yeah, I mean, it is. So it's just, like, you're still seeing these, like, unlucky frustration, maybe it's just penalties that shouldn't be happening if you're the Kings. But on the other side of it, it's the power play that's what's more frustrating because the Oilers are going to get theirs on the power play. That's it. Yep. It's given. If they're 33% on their whole series, it is what it is. You just take it and leave it. But you have to get yours if you're on the power play, if you're the Kings. And just for the power play, it's almost been non-existent. It just feels like the same kind of – for the Oilers, I saw somebody tweet. I forget who it was, but it was like when the Oilers are on the power play, it feels like a 5-on-3. When the Kings are on the power play, it's like a 5-on-5. And because they're not just like not shooting it, they're not getting lanes. It's so weird to watch because you obviously have Victor Arvidsson now back in the fold, and he's been in the fold now for a little while. Yet they're still figuring things out for some reason on the power play. And even though it was trending in the right direction for a little while, it doesn't feel like it's that same power play that we saw a little bit toward the end or toward most of the last year too. So that's the part they need to figure out the most.
I would just give credit to Edmonton's penalty kill. I mean, they look like they're very aggressive. They're not allowing people to set up. They're not allowing people to get into spots that are vulnerable. They're attacking up high, you know, with the puck carrier. So I would give more credit. I mean, it looks bad on the power play for us, but I would give more credit to the penalty kill for Edmonton.
Randon, I'm so glad you said that because that's exactly what I would say. So I don't know what else to add about the Edmonton power play. They can throw so many different looks at you. There's so many different weapons. There's so many different guys that can beat you. You know, the Kings, they're not the only team that's going to struggle against Edmonton's power play. You take one thing away, they're going to find another lane. They're going to find another outlet. That is what it is. But I think you're exactly right, Randon. I think this is an example of excellent pre-scouting by the Edmonton Oilers. They know exactly what the Kings are going to look to do because unlike Edmonton, and listen, I'm not blaming the Kings for this. They don't have, nobody has, you know, unless you're maybe Colorado has, you know, McDavid and the equivalent of McDavid and Draisaitl. So I'm not hating the Kings too much on this, but, you know, obviously with Arvidsson back, we've talked about how much more effective it's been. He allows for that passing option from the down low. It creates a little bit more, but, you know, that's kind of their looks. While it is opening up more looks, it's easier to adjust to that if you're the Oilers. And I think, Randon, you're right that I think this is as much to do with the Oilers penalty kill and having a good idea of what the Kings are going to try to do, rather than necessarily the Kings being poor. I mean, obviously there's going to be times where I guess they could be a little bit more effective and crisper in some instances, but I agree. I think it's a lot more to do with the Oilers kill. And I'll be curious to see if, you know, if LA is able to make a couple minor tweaks to the power play in Los Angeles for game three.
They have to just be a little bit more crisp. And I think they also have to be a little bit more, for lack of a better word, flowy. And when the power play is working the best, they're just cycling because you have people that can switch out with each other. Fiala, Kepe switch out all the time. Arvidsson plays down low and in the bumper. You have Kopitar that can play also on the other spot and then on the other half wall. You've seen Kempe play at the point with Doughty. So there's so many people that are cycling, and it just seems very stagnant where pass back and forth, Edmonton player comes up, chips the puck, and then it goes out. Like, so it doesn't seem very flowy to me in that part, and it needs to be. It needs to be more creative because you have to score, and if we score 25% the rest of the series and Edmonton's at 30, you're at least eliminating or matching the chances that you get off the special teams there. So I think it's very necessary for the team to be a little bit more confident, a little bit more creative, take a little bit more chances, and give Fiala the chance to let Kev be Kev. You know, let him cycle, do whatever he needs to do, and he might make a mistake. But sometimes when he starts getting really creative in that on that power play, it opens places up because you start dragging defenders towards him. Like a black hole, and that opens up spots for everybody else.
Yeah, you need to at least match them, like you said, because I thought in game two the Kings were the better team at 5-on-5. So if you're able to match the Oilers on special teams, then and you can just win the 5-on-5 battle, because that's where obviously where the Kings want to win, because it's harder to match the special teams with the Oilers. But if you can win that 5-on-5 battle and match the special teams, then I really like the Kings' chances, because what was so refreshing to see is that after game one, like, everybody knew what the problem was. It's like the Oilers were just getting far too many easy entries, and it led to high danger chances, like, often, like, throughout the entire game. And then game two, you heard, I think, Kempe say it, you heard Doughty say it, and then Jim Hiller all say it, that they just didn't really establish that 1-3-1 really at all the entire game. You never saw it. And game two, even then, you didn't really see it too often, I thought. So I still think there's chance to improve in that area. So if the 5-on-5 can just be that typical 5-on-5, and I hate that I'm saying this, but just turn it into that boring hockey that the Kings love to play, because the Oilers don't want to play that. They want Connor McDavid. We saw it like 3 or 4 times last night. Like, he tried to take on like 4 or 5 Kings in the neutral zone. It just never worked. You had Gavrikov there. You had Arvidsson there, Deneau, who have all done a pretty decent job, even though the numbers will say otherwise. But like, that's the thing for the Kings, and their reason for success is to get into that 1-3-1, turn it into a slog, make a ton of traffic in the neutral zone, and force McDavid to go through 5 people. Because special teams, it's struggling right now. So anything you get a power play at this point, it feels like a bonus right now.
Yeah, and I think I wonder if when they get to LA, if that. I've referred to it as sludge hockey. I wonder if we'll see a lot more of that in Los Angeles than we were able to see in Edmonton. I think Edmonton was able to really dictate a lot of the pace. I agree, though. I don't think the Kings were bad at against Edmonton in game 2 by any means, but it wasn't like true Kings hockey. And Hiller alluded to this in today's media availability, that he's like, there's still another level there. And I think when a lot of people hear that, another level of like, hey, let's play better. Let's like get after him a little bit more. When I hear Jim Hiller say that, another level is let's slow this thing down a little bit more. Let's really, you know, tell the rink crew to make this ice as bad as possible type of thing. Because I think you're right, Russ, the Kings ideally would like to play a little bit more of a boring style of play than what we've seen in Edmonton. They were able to make it work in game 2, but, and that'll, again, I don't know. We'll see if they're able to do that. But like Randon said with the kill, a lot of that credit's got to go to Edmonton for the reason that the Kings haven't been able to get established in that 1-3-1. I mean, it's Edmonton's really good. Edmonton is fast. Edmonton's got D-men that can move. Edmonton's got the best player on the planet. Sometimes it ain't that easy to do what you want to do against them. And they showed why in the first 2 games. So I think the Kings should be, you know, feeling excellent about getting a split.
Yeah, it's going to be something to see about how the special teams works up. 0-for-3 in game 2. Hopefully what's not 0-for-3 is your betting odds when using DraftKings, because that's where you should be for all your betting needs. DraftKings is here for your chase for the Stanley Cup. And it is on. And if you're looking to light the lamp, nothing beats the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NHL. From the start of the playoff beards all the way to hoisting the cup, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boost, and so much more. Kings leveled the odds after winning game two and now are plus 110 on the money line for game three. So get your bets in here at DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the app now. Use code THPN. New customers get bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code THPN only on DraftKings. The crown is yours here at DraftKings. Pick number 27, Darius Robinson out of Missouri goes to the Cardinals. So all you Rams fans have a nice little DN to deal with there. So let's go to the next key to winning. And I know people, a lot of people are like, hey, we won a game. Let's get a little positive in here. But we got to be realistic. We're playing a tough team, and we're going to have to win a lot of tough matchups.
And that game's over. So
yeah, that game's over.
You rest on your laurels all you want. But
so the bottom six was a key for us to win the series. Bottom six did not show up in game two. Even though they won the game, outscored. Kulak got a goal. Dylan Holloway had two goals. So the bottom six showed up for Edmonton. What are you seeing out of our bottom six, you know, whether it be from the PLD line or the Lewis line or the non-existent play of Grundstrom, who we thought was a player that really needed to show up? Joe, take any of those points and run with it. But what are you seeing?
Well, first, I think it's more accurate to call it the bottom five. Grundstrom really isn't seeing a lot of ice time. And Jim Hiller said he told Grundstrom he wasn't going to see a lot of ice time. He didn't see a lot of ice time, and he probably isn't going to see a lot of ice time next game. So it may be more accurate to refer to them as the bottom five. And you're exactly right, Randon. It hasn't been good enough. Pierre-Luc Dubois has been pretty bad at least from a possession and analytical standpoint. He has not been very good.
He has been a lot more physical than I thought. Throwing the body around a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, not to say that he's been like invisible, you know, he's been somewhat noticeable at moments, but from a possession standpoint, which we talked about, like you're kind of hoping that bottom six would, again, bottom six / bottom five would carry against the Edmonton depth. I don't think it's really translated that way. Fiala has been a little hit and miss here as well. And you know, Lazard and Lewis are going to do what they can.
Kansas City just trades up into Buffalo's spot. Sorry,
oh, keep going. Interesting. In my neck of the woods, anyways. So I don't know. I think that it isn't good enough, but I go back and I really appreciate, Randon, that you said this earlier about tipping the cap to Edmonton. It's like they're deep too. It's like their bottom six is good. I'm not saying that it should be better than LA's, because I think LA's, if you've got Dubois and Fiala as two of your bottom six, and you know how big fans of Lazat we are, like, this should be better than it is, but it hasn't been. You're right, and it does need to be better.
You should be tilting the scales more than they have been, for sure.
Agreed. That's fair.
You should be, right. Yeah. If you're the Kings, you should be winning the bottom six battle, because I might push back on the Oilers' bottom six being pretty good or being deep, because I know Holloway got those two goals. I mean, you could say that maybe they're like fortunate a little bit. He's not to say he's been bad.
Mm-hmm.
Corey Perry hasn't looked good. Evander Kane looks like he's really hurt. I can kind of see it. Like every time he goes to take a hit, he just kind of falls over, as opposed to being that physical Evander Kane that we're used to seeing against the Kings. And was like,
Dylan Holloway is a first round pick, though. I mean, he was a leader in Wisconsin. He's a great player.
No, he's got a great potential, but this is a matchup that the Kings should be winning, is all I'll say. And they have
100%.
And it's like, it's good and bad after watching game two, that in the fact that they lost that bottom six battle, but they still won the game, which at that point, you're kind of beating your top unit, the Kings' top unit's beating the Oilers' top unit. So, like we're seeing, like we talked about with the power play, there's still room for improvement there. Same thing with 5-on-5. There's still room for improvement there. And the same thing with the bottom six. Like if the Kings can figure out a way where you get players like PLD and Fiala and even Lazat, who I think has been pretty good, if you can win those matchups now, especially when you go home and you have that last change where you can match up your skill guys against Evander Kane, Corey Perry, and try to win those offensive matchups. I really like the Kings' chances, especially at home. So that'll be interesting to see, because when the Oilers get two goals out of Holloway and one goal out of Kulak and still end up losing that game, that's a huge win for the Kings. Because McDavid, I'll say it again, McDavid's going to get hit. So when the fact that you're losing the bottom six battle against an Oilers team where you have Holloway scoring and Kulak and all these players, that's a positive.
Yeah.
I mean, McDavid with 1 point.
Just look at that. The Dubois. So, and Hiller, because you can see you can just look at the ice time and see that he's trying to figure out what works, because, you know, Danault, Arvidsson, and Moore played the most at 5-on-5, and a minute behind them was the Kopitar, Byfield, and Kempe line. Dubois, Fiala, Laferriere only managed just under 7 minutes together, but 5 shot attempts to 14 against. They were on the ice for 2 goals against at 5-on-5, a 28% expected goals. Like, that's just not good enough. I mean, that is awful against, again, Russ, I probably think Edmonton's depth is a little better than maybe some will give it credit for. But I will, to your point, the Dubois line should be carrying that, period. Like, they should be controlling that play. And they got killed in game. They got killed in game two. And
in both games. I mean, even with Byfield and Fiala, like, you're talking about a top line player in Byfield, a top line player in Fiala, your most dynamic forward in Fiala, and you can't win the possession battle, like, it, against third stringers. Like, it makes zero sense to me.
To Russ's point, Kopitar, Byfield, and Kempe have yet to be on the ice for a goal against a 5-on-5 in this series. So that's going well. They really need that depth, though, because I don't know if this is sustainable. Like, if the Kings' depth is going to continue to get beaten, that worries me, because, as we've said, like, you know, we're talking about ways that, you know, the Oilers could just as easily say Leon Draisaitl hasn't done anything at 5-on-5, and it's still a 1-1 series. You know, there's other ways to flip it, and they've got to be better. The Dubois, Fiala, now, hey, I don't know if he's going to run Hiller, that is, basically 11 forwards. So we can touch on that if you want to. But you're going to see mixes and matches. And given how it's going, I guess I can't blame him.
Is, as the line I just put up there, is that PLD was brought here to be to play the 83rd game this season. He was brought in to lead in the playoffs and have that depth down the center. And so far, that hasn't worked. It hasn't worked all season. It hasn't worked now. I'm looking at this team here, and like you said, Joe, how much more can we rely on Kopitar and the Danault line to outplay McDavid and Draisaitl for the entire 5-game series that's left? I would not want to bet on those odds. So, like, it has to change.
And at some point,
PLD has to be the player that he interviewed when he got here. Are those just words? Like, hey, I want to win a Stanley Cup. I want to dominate. I want to be here. Chief select Xavier Worthy out of Texas. I want to be here for the long term. I want to do all this kind of stuff and leave this to a Stanley Cup. Are those just words? Are you really want to be here? Because sometimes you show that you can dominate, and sometimes you show that you, like I thought when we made the trade initially, that you're not even a top two center on this team. So that, for me, is just it's a thing of sometimes you got to pull yourself up by the bootstraps, you know, rub dirt in and all those old cliches. The player of the game for game three needs to be PLD. Like, we need to see something at the bottom six. And I'm tired of giving him excuses because it hasn't been good enough.
And I wonder if we'll see, and Hiller didn't really seem, he wasn't going to tip his hand even if there was, but he didn't seem like he's overly concerned about any matchups. Like you said, Russ, Kopitar in the past has spent most of the time against Draisaitl, and it went a lot worse last two years than it did so far this year, the first two games.
Yeah, that's a great sign.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough test. So what that does is it really puts the Danault line in a bit of a tough spot because we're so used to them controlling play. It's just tough to do against McDavid. So, you know, I know there's, you know, Arvidsson's numbers are poor from a possession standpoint, but it's like, I don't know. I don't want to take him with a grain of salt because listen, at the end of the day, this is the task at hand and you've got to find a way to be better than what it's been, but it's a tough one. But I don't know. Do you think you'll see, I don't know if there'll be anything forwards or defensemen, if you'll think that we see any difference in matchups, Russ.
I don't know. Actually, I've been trying to think about that. It's like you see Fiala play with Lazat and Lewis at times, and I wonder if that's the switch he goes back to, because I think like everything you said with Dubois, Randon, and yeah, it's been all year, so I won't be too critical about Kev, but he needs to be better too. I think in this series, we got a goal, but it more or less kind of a fluky one, a little bit there. So he needs to start pushing the pace a little bit. And then now when you get the matchup advantage where you come home now and get the last change. So I'm curious to see if Hiller goes back to Fiala with Lazat and Lewis, where they can kind of establish a forecheck against their bottom six of the Oilers. Cause like what Joe said, Arvidsson's numbers haven't looked good. Some people are kind of wondering where Moore has been. But their job this series isn't to score. Their job this series is to try to limit as much production from McDavid as possible. And I mean, if you were able to keep McDavid off the score sheet at 5-on-5, that's a win for me. And that's exactly what happened in game two. The Kings got the win. So you're going to have to try to find that production elsewhere. You can't, like Randon said, you can't rely on Kopitar to continue to keep doing this and carry it, and Kempe to continue to keep doing this. But I mean, they've looked good, which is great to see. Mm-hmm. Byfield seems like those three seem like they've kind of got that same chemistry that they had a little bit earlier in the year. So if that continues, that's a great sign, because the last 2 years when they've played Edmonton, Drysdale's just kind of had his way with Kopitar. And yep. I don't know if that's to say that, like, I don't know. I'll have to look to see who Drysdale had been playing with, but maybe it was Evander Kane. And he's not playing on that line anymore because of his injury or whatever he's kind of dealing with. But it just seems like that the Oilers have kind of become this just Connor McDavid line. And if you're able to shut down Drysdale and hopefully limit some of that bottom six production that we talked about and win that matchup, then, yeah, the Kings have a real good shot at winning this series.
And we don't really have anything to go off of. The last time Edmonton was in L.A. was – February 10th, which was Hiller's first game. So he's just getting his feel under everything. And so really wasn't a whole lot. Kopitar only played a few minutes against McDavid. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know what to expect from Hiller to see if there will be much change or if he's just perfectly comfortable rolling what he's been doing. It didn't come off as like coach speak to me in the media availability. He just genuinely seemed like, I'm honestly not all that worried about it. So he may be, a little less concerned about a straight matchup, but I guess we'll see.
Pick number 29 in the draft. Cowboys select Tyler Guyton, tackle out of Oklahoma. I agree with that here. Let's get into the bottom six in a different way, because you said Grunstrom has barely been playing. Mm-hmm. I thought he'd be a major factor in this team. Is there a reason to purposely handicap yourself with not playing a player that should be playing or that can play? Should they bring up Akil Thomas or Turcotte, who had a hat trick a couple days ago, and actually have four lines? Because it seems to me that you're just suiting up a guy that is not there. Like, what's the point at that point?
The crunch from things weird, yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Joe.
No, I was just gonna say I don't think the sense I get, and this is just from watching media availability, press conference, whatever. I don't think Hiller has an ounce of interest in playing somebody like a Turcotte or an Akil Thomas in the playoffs right now. I don't think he wants to do it. I think he's gonna roll with his 11. He's gonna dress 12. Because if somebody goes down or something like that, then he's got Grunstrom he can spot in. I don't know what the reason is. You know, we talked about it in the past with McClellan, where and this is all coaches, right? If it's a trust thing. If they just don't trust the guy to do what you want him to do, that's going to play a factor. And Hiller alluded to, he just likes the flow of the 11. He likes the guys able to get into a rhythm. He mentioned guys that don't play special teams, guys that don't kill penalties. It gets them on the ice a little bit more. You know, I will say, if he's going to go 11, I would rather him go dress the 12 and just play Grundstrom sparingly than dress 7D. They don't have good enough. They don't have 7D good enough to do that. So again, I don't know if it's a great thing, Randon. I don't know if it's sustainable. I don't know if this is something you can go deep in a playoff with by just leaning so heavily on the 11 forwards. When we hear so often in playoffs, you need four lines deep, especially you go to overtime, and luck, it was a quick overtime, but you get to a point where that could get problematic. So it certainly seems to be his preferred method right now. I'm with you. I think Grundstrom can be a contributor, but I don't know. Maybe he just didn't see enough at the tail end there of the season to say, you know what, I trust this guy, you know, when basically my job's on the line.
Well, yeah, and this is Grundstrom's first taste back into action is playoff hockey too. That's not something you get acclimated that quickly mm-hmm. to, even though he's been here before.
I mean, Mark Stone scored on his first shift back in that.
He did.
That is very true. Yeah, I'm with Joe. I don't go 11-7. I stick with the 12-6. As much as we love Morara here, I think that's kind of asking him a lot. And then where do you even play Morara too? When you kind of mix and match, you're not going to pair him with Englund again, hopefully. We'd never see that again. But yeah, as far as the Grundstrom thing, it's kind of weird. I'm curious to see how they make that happen and how they deploy him when they're back home now, especially the start of the game. Maybe you get him a couple extra shifts. But yeah, Hiller's 11-7, whatever, 11 forwards has been his thing ever since he's been here. And the whole reason he likes it is because he has a guy named Quinton Byfield on the team that he can just use everywhere on the ice. And I'm not disappointed or I'm not upset about that. If you're telling me you're going to give Quinton Byfield, who led all forwards in 5-on-5 time in game two, if you're going to give him the extra minutes as opposed to playing a Carl Grundstrom or Trevor Lewis or even maybe an Alex Laferriere, then make that happen. Give him the opportunity, because we've seen Quinton Byfield use his length and especially in the neutral zone a little bit and be physical, probably a lot more than a lot of other Kings in this series too. So I love the way that Byfield's been able to play. I think we're seeing him. I was kind of worried that he might hit a wall in the postseason a little bit from all the good things that we saw in the regular season, even though he kind of struggled a bit toward the end. But he's still been that same kind of Byfield where he's exuding that confidence that we saw throughout the regular season. So if that continues, then I'm not opposed to Hiller continuing to run this 11 forward lineup and then kind of mix and matching a little bit, because it's got to the point where all these forwards have played with everybody at this point. So you just can't continue rolling with the 11 forwards that Hiller likes to use and try to find some success from it.
I like what you're saying there, because Byfield's earned this. I mean, and we talked about it this year that he needed to have a big season. He didn't quite hit the 60-point mark that I was asking for, but I'll let it slide based on and how he's played this year. And if it means more minutes for him over Grundstrom and they're kind of floating him on both sides, you know, I'm just a big Tonka fan. I really think that he could bring a lot, something different to this roster that doesn't have and set the tone. And it's a shame. Maybe he's not 100% healthy. Maybe he's... just hasn't earned the confidence. He played zero games at the end of the season. So I don't know what the reason is, but the positive to this situation is that Byfield's getting more opportunities, and he showed big. He got the chip to lead to the Kopitar goal at the end of the game. He's been strong on the boards. He's been asked to do whatever he needs to do and has rung that bell. So speaking of bells rung, goalies have not looked good on either side for this game. Lots of pucks going in the net. The lamps have been lit quite often. But Talbot comes back, and Joe, you and I both said that he needs to have a couple key saves in this game, in game two, for the Kings to win. And he definitely did that. One-on-one shots, big shots on the power play, or the penalty kill to come up big. What did you see from Talbot in game two? Do you go to Rich in game three, knowing that he's got an impeccable home record? And, you know, Talbot, yeah, he got the win, but he's let in what, 12 goals in two games. So where's your thought process on that?
Talbot made a couple of key saves at the right time. No question. The Draisaitl one sticks out big time. I mean, that was one of the best plays. I mean, that play by McDavid was just incredible. And then I literally jumped out of my chair when the pass got made. And then, yeah, like was an audible, holy crap, when Talbot made the save. Like, it was a great hockey play all around. Yeah, I mean, if you told me the Kings are getting an 872 save percentage in the first two games, I'm like, they're down 0-2. This is what I would have said. But, you know, as you alluded to, Skinner has been pretty horrible. Although I will say, I think first game, like I said, those were flukes. I
those were flukes. Don't tell a goalie that.
Huh?
Don't tell a goalie that, though.
No, I mean.
After that, it's weird because after that Nurse bounce off his skate, you saw Nurse kind of go like, oh, sorry, buddy. Skinner was still pissed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you said, goalies, they're different.
They're players. A little out. Well, I mean, the one went off Bouchard's skate. The one went off two skates. Dubois went off two skates. It's like, I don't know. I'm willing to give Skinner's like a little bit more of grace, I guess, just because there was some horrible puck luck with him. Talbot, he's been okay. I don't think this is good enough for the series. I do think it's got to be a little bit better than this. Would I go to Rittich? I'm fine with it. Not losing sleep if they go to Talbot. I will be stunned if they go to David Rittich after a win. There's no way, in my opinion, Hiller's going to go to Rittich. I think it's going to be Talbot. And I'm not going to kill him. I'm not losing sleep over it. It is what it is. I mean, it's not as if they've got like an ace in David Rittich. So, I agree, Randon. He's given up a bundle, and his numbers are certainly not anything to write home about, but I just don't see them making a change there after a win.
It's weird to think about, too, because, like, let's say that Talbot makes one of those saves that he probably should have made on some of those goals, but mm-hmm. he doesn't make that Draisaitl save. We're probably not even talking about Cam Talbot. We're probably just saying, oh, penalty kill is still an issue, like all these other storylines that are probably going on, so... Yeah, and so for me, like, I'm not making a goalie change. You have the win. Cam Talbot, he's made saves. He's probably not making the saves that you want him to make in certain situations, so there's still room for improvement there, but it feels like it would give the wrong message to a team where it's like, this is the guy that we've gone to battle with the entire year, even though Rittich has come in mm-hmm. and looked pretty good at times. I feel like some of his numbers are a little bit inflated because a lot of it was against the Sharks and some pretty bad teams. But, I mean, it's not to say that he's been a pretty good goalie for the Kings in his time here. But Cam Talbot, like I said, this is the guy that the Kings have gone to battle with the entire year. It would send the wrong message. I feel like the team can kind of rally behind Talbot because he's a really well-liked guy in the room, really yeah. well-respected guy in the room, too, that wants to win. He's like he said at this press conference over the summer when he was signed here. He wants to come here and win a Stanley Cup because he sees the roster that is in front of him. So give him that opportunity to go out and win a Stanley Cup. This is a guy who's motivated that hasn't won it before. So he's going to want to push back and try to be that number one goaltender that the Kings need him to be. So this isn't to say that I want to see him make those big 10-bell Draisaitl saves that he's been making, but stop the pucks that you probably should be stopping. And at least give the Kings an opportunity to win games.
All right, you're looking at, oh man, Niners select Ricky Pearsall, wide receiver out of Florida. Seems like a reach, but he's electric. That's interesting. That's I don't know what to think about that as a Niners fan. I'll process that and move on. I look at it this way, and Russ, you kind of piqued my interest in the way you kind of worded that last segment. Talbot was brought in here, whether the money means so or not. He was a very quick signing in the offseason. He was an all-star. They rode with him most of the year. They brought in Rittich, or they rode Rittich after the fact of a goalie injury. It seems like they're gonna give him the type of respect that an ace deserves when they went back and forth down the stretch. So all the actions down the stretch were of a mindset of let's go back and forth with the goalies, you know, how Boston's going, but it just kind of seems like an underlying tone of, hey, he's our ace. Unless stuff really goes off the rails, Talbot's going to be in the pipes.
Well, and that's kind of what we talked about too at the beginning of the year, is if you're going to bring Talbot in here to be that number one, then he shouldn't be starting every game. You have to try to figure out this rotation throughout the regular season, especially in these games that you should be winning. And that's kind of what we saw, is we saw Riddick play those games against the Sharks, games against the Ducks, and I don't know, I could be wrong there, but he had a lot of the starts toward the end where we saw that rotation. But now Talbot's the ace. And it's weird that we're having this conversation, because I wonder if, like, Oilers fans probably should be having this conversation more with Skinner, just based off of the game two performance, because I thought he played really poor in that performance. But they have, like, Calvin Picard as their backup goalie.
They're not
making a change. So that's I guess that's a good thing if you're a Kings fan, that if you can really get to Skinner, they don't really have anyone else to turn to, because Picard's been horrible. Their next guy after that is Jack Campbell, who just got lit up by the rain in game one of their series. So he's been horrible. So the Kings need to keep doing what they've done, I feel like, these first two games, just get bodies in front of Skinner. And it's really worked. And it's just kind of frustrating him a little bit. And now if that can kind of get into his mindset a little bit, where maybe their team starts wondering, like, oh, crap, can my goalie now not make a save? Maybe I can't gamble on pucks because now I can't rely on my goaltender making that big save. Because, I mean, there was a breakaway too that Cam Talbot saved. So he made the big saves that needed to be made throughout the entire game. He just kind of let in maybe a couple softies, but I didn't think it was overly a poor performance from him. If he can continue to be the Cam Talbot that we saw throughout the year, and the Kings too, like we talked about, like their neutral zone has been pretty leaky their first two games. So if they can get that neutral zone back to what we've seen through the Kings, that limits a lot of the chances that the Oilers are able to produce throughout the entire game and makes it easier for the goalies. That's what the Kings want to do. So if you make that easier for Cam Talbot, then he should be performing better in the next few games here.
Carolina moves up and trades with Buffalo to get the last pick in the first round. We'll see who they get. Yeah, it's just something that we're just going to have to ride. We're just going to have to ride Talbot. And Skinner's getting frustrated. I saw a couple tweets today by Oilers fans asking for I forgot his name already.
Picard.
Campbell.
Campbell. Yeah, I was like, he's got lit up in the AHL. So, no offense to Soupy. Thank you for your time here in LA. But yeah, Edmonton fans are frustrated too with the play in the pipes, and I don't blame them. Going forward with this team, what needs to happen going forward? I know we've hit a couple of points of where the team needs to be better. If you were to say, hey, the Kings need a what? Split at home, at minimum, obviously, to remain in the series, or maybe take two games at home. What needs to happen and why, Joe?
Well, they need Gavrikov and Roy to actually play well. That has not been a good pairing. That pairing has been kind of a defensive, is supposed to be one of the best defensive shutdown pairs in the NHL. And, you know, it really hasn't been. This playoffs, I think they're running a sub 40% expected goals. And again, they're against McDavid, but if you're going to build your team like this, then you're expected, this is what they're expected to do, is to shut him down. And that has not happened yet. That's another thing kind of we talked about earlier. If there's going to be a matchup, if Hiller prefers that matchup, or Anderson, Doughty against, McDavid, we'll see. But I think of Gavrikov, because you look at the numbers for the other two pairings. Anderson Doughty's been really good, and I want to go off on a tangent here on how good Jordan Spence has been. He has been excellent, and if you look up the numbers of Spence and Englund together in the first two games in this series. Now, I think they've played the least out of any defense, but I think they've averaged about 12 minutes per game at 5-on-5. But when they are together, Spence and Englund are 54.2% Corsi for, and they're even 50% expected goals. I don't think anybody would have expected that out of the third pair. And just to give an idea of how much that's driven by Jordan Spence, when Englund's been away from Spence, he's been 14% Corsi and literally 4.5 expected goals. So Jordan Spence is doing, he's having a really nice series here. I wouldn't mind seeing him see his minutes tick up a little bit. I think he's kind of earning that. He's playing really well. And I think, and I tweeted it earlier, his play he made on the goal, the Kopitar goal, no other Kings defenseman does that except for Brett Clark. No other Kings defenseman does what he did. He gets the puck. He gets some pressure. Every other defenseman is off the glass and just throw it to the neutral zone and hope for the best. And sometimes the Kings wingers skate into it and they get into the zone. Other times it's just whatever. He spins off. He maintains possession, makes a DDD pass to Mikey Anderson, who goes up. The goal happens because of Jordan Spence. That right there is an example of why, and that's how you beat a team like Edmonton, is you got to be able to play with them. You have to be able to play skill with them, because off the glass and out in that situation, it probably ends up back on Edmonton's stick. Lord knows. You know, at the very least, it's not in the back of Edmonton's net. So I know this started, Randon, with who needs to be better, and I went off on a Jordan Spence tangent, but I really wanted to make sure he got his due here because I think he's deserved it. To me, the Gavrikov-Roy pairing's got to be better.
Yeah, and I'll kind of agree with that. And I was actually going to say what Lieb here put in the chat is that Gavrikov's, I'll just read what he said. He said, Gavi has been pinching way too often and is rarely back on the blue line in the neutral zone 1-3-1. And I agree. Like, he's been gambling way too much, especially when you're matched up against McDavid. I get you want to try to push the pace a little bit, but if there's a chance, if there's at least the slightest chance that you might lose that gamble, don't go for it, because then you have an odd man rush with the best player in the world leading the rush the other way. No, thank you. As much as I love Matt Roy and how good he is, like, I don't like his chances in that situation. So yeah, they have to be a little bit more conservative in that situation, because I've seen that happen way too much in these first two games. So, but with, for me, it's just, I think I just want to see Kevin Fiala be Kevin Fiala. We haven't really seen him get his opportunities or really have as much time with the puck in the offensive zone. And that's kind of why I thought, or I think, that maybe Hiller goes back to Lizotte, or back to him with Lizotte and Lewis. Because when I asked Hiller about those three together, it kind of made sense, his answer, when he said that he likes playing Fiala with those two because he gets more touches in the offensive zone. Okay. So if that's actually the case, and if that's what you believe, then okay, put him back with each other, because we haven't seen Fiala get those offensive touches in the mm-hmm. O-zone. So I want to see Fiala, if he gets back with 22 and 46, or 61 and 46, sorry. If he gets back with those two players, then I want to see him perform and be at least that Kem Fiala where he can kind of dictate the speed and the pace a little bit more, and be the playmaker that the Kings need him to be.
I think Johnny Van Patna comes in here. It's a good time to plug the Let Kev Be Kev shirts. Yes, we do have a Let Kev Be Kev shirts. Here, Let Kev Be Kev shirts at sizes small through double XL for 30. If you want to get the More Kev combo, $45, DM NHL Russell and Venmo at Hockey Royalty for all your order needs. I think it's not that he needs to be better, but my question was, if we're going to win one or both of these games, what needs to show up? And I think it's Adrian Kempe. And Adrian Kempe showed his dominance in game two. He is the best player on this team, in my opinion. He led the team in points, dethroned Kopitar for the first time in over a decade that somebody else has scored the most points on this team. He's the type of player, and he is now the guy that you need to lean on in order to score, not only on the power play, but on 5-on-5. His defense has gotten a lot better off the rush. When he's one-on-one with the goalie, he's almost unstoppable. If the Kings win both these games, I'm guessing Kempe's got at least 4 points. And that's the player that I think needs to – your players need to make plays. Your dominant players need to make plays. And he's the best player on this roster, and he needs to show up if this team's going to have any chance of sweeping at home.
I'll say Al Smith had a good call out that could use some improvement. We're running a sub 40% like to viewer ratio. So let's hit that like button and get that. Let's get that over 50% at least. Let's get more likes going. But we appreciate everybody in the chat. It's buzzing again. Keep firing the stuff in. It's good stuff. Appreciate it. And thank
you. Our Corsi 4 needs to be better than the Kings Corsi in game.
It should always be the goal. Yes.
Yeah. Let's get it going. All right. Let's talk about the rest of the division here, or rest of the league, and see where the Stanley Cup is going on. A couple of head scratchers here. The first one being Dallas down 0-2. Vegas has come in and curb stomped Dallas in their own building twice. Vegas looks like they're pulling off the $16 million LTIR special here. I saw somebody put out this response to the LTIR. Not that they should get rid of it, but if like 5 games before the end of the season, however many games you miss out of those 5 should mean you have to miss that amount going into the playoffs. So if you miss 3 or 4 to end the season, you need to be out for 3 or 4. So there's no last minute, oh, he's healthy. Because everybody was saying, yeah, you know, Mark Stone, oh, it's a real injury. He'll be out till mid-May, and all of a sudden he's healthy. And you look at a lot of these hockey guys are tougher than they give credit for. I forget the player's name, but a guy in Florida had like a 3 broken ribs, a torn MCL, and he still played throughout most of the playoffs. So I'm sure Stone has somewhat of a healing process need to go, but he's a gamer. So maybe that's something you do, a little penalty if you don't finish the regular season. But Vegas looks like another wagon again to start the playoffs, and Dallas does not look as good as advertised. What have you guys seen, if you guys seen anything in that series so far?
I haven't really watched too much of that series. It seems like that game is always kind of going on when the Kings game's on. So I haven't seen too much of it, but man, I was totally wrong. I thought Dallas would come out and kind of dictate the pace and be the same Dallas Stars team that they had been. And especially toward the end of the year now, and you picked up some great players like Tanev and at the deadline, but Vegas, man, I mean, Stone is a difference. It's crazy how big of a difference he is to that team. And it's so ironic too that he scores the first goal of game one. It was just like, and like, yeah, it's frustrating. I can imagine being like, if I was a Stars fan, I'd be so pissed. I'd be so pissed because like you're telling me that Mark Stone is healthy enough, but he couldn't play like 2 days earlier or 3 days earlier. Like, let's be real here. So like, I agree. Like nothing's going to happen in the short term. I've read they have to do it in the next CBA. But like I don't mind that Randon. Like I've said, like maybe if the player can't play in the last 5 or 10 games or so, then he can't play in the first round or something like that. Because it's ridiculous. It really is. So like, yeah, man. Like the Stars, they're in trouble. They're in trouble because Vegas looks good. And I guess if you're a Kings fan, that's good to see, because let's say the Kings do get past the first round. I mean, it's looking more likely, and we'll dive into the Canucks series, but I mean, if you don't have to play Dallas at any point in the next few rounds, where you got Vegas now, and that third seed would give you home ice advantage against a Vegas series. So I guess if you're a Kings fan, you're probably rooting for Vegas, which is
– do they reseed? Is it reseed?
No, it's a bracket.
If it's not reseeding, then we play the winner of Winnipeg and Colorado.
So that would be like – further down the line. I'm just saying Dallas is obviously the one seed overall, so they'd have home ice advantage over everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're out, then there goes a matchup the Kings didn't want and probably would be roughed up against a bit. But then let's say they do end up facing Vegas further down the line. I'm getting ahead of myself, but just to say that if that does happen, the Kings get home ice advantage.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to the LTIR thing. I'll be honest, I don't. I don't care about it as much as a lot of people do. I don't know. It doesn't bother me really.
I don't hold it against Vegas. I just saying that there needs to be a change.
No.
Yeah. I don't even say that. I mean, I get it. I understand it, I guess, but I think if the second you get into some alternatives, you're going to run into situations that were like, oh shit, this is pretty bad too. So I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
I just don't think like should Dallas be punished because they didn't have any injuries?
Well, listen, I don't want to. Here's the thing. I don't want to hear it from Dallas. You're the number one seed. Yes, it's a tough matchup. Don't get me wrong, but I don't. You're the one seed. You got what, the best goalie, arguably the best goalie in the West. You've got a great team. It shouldn't matter. And yes, Mark Stone is a great player, but I guarantee you, if you were to look at the odds going into the series without Mark Stone and then you input Mark Stone, Dallas is still favored in that series. So I don't know. I don't really want to hear it. I got little time for it. Injuries happen.
The Kings did their LTIR magic with Grundstrom. It's just kind of more on the down low. They just didn't add anybody at the deadline.
That's the thing. I was thinking about that, Russ. They did
LTIR
it,
I mean, for 25 seconds a night.
Didn't use it.
It's true. They had to LTIR Grundstrom and Turcotte in order to activate Orbison. So
yeah.
I mean, it certainly seemed Grundstrom was practicing with the team for like 3 weeks.
Yeah. So again, this idea, like, every team does it in their own ways. It happens to be Stone because the guy's body's falling apart. Now, I'm not going to question if he had a lacerated spleen. I don't think that that's a lie because I don't think, like, I think they would get in some serious trouble for that if, like, that is looked into. So, you know, I think he's an animal and he's come back and he's played through it and whatever. I don't really care about that as much as a lot of people. I mean, Dallas is controlling the 5-on-5, like you, Russ, have not watched much of this series at all. So just looking at some numbers, Dallas is controlling the possession at 5-on-5, but, you know, Logan Thompson, or I think Logan Thompson's the one getting the nod in net for Vegas, is playing really well. Vegas is finishing. Only 6 power plays total in that series. Oh, wow. 3 each, so not a lot of penalties going on in that series. So it's a lot of 5-on-5 play, and you know, Vegas makes life hard for teams.
What's not hard is this $20 donation here by Shankmaster. Thanks, we all enjoy what you guys do. Keep up the great work. Enjoy.
Appreciate that.
Appreciate it, everybody.
So let's get into the next series here. Going down the western side, Colorado, Winnipeg tied 1-1. Games looked to have been pretty competitive. I watched a little bit of it the night before. Have you guys seen anything from this series? Obviously, Vilardi looks as advertised, having a huge series. The trade looks worse and worse on our end here, going into the playoffs. But what do you guys feel about that
series? Well, it's weird because the Vilardi highlight was great in game 2, but that line was destroyed in that entire game, in game 2 at least. I mean, Shifley, I think Connor is on the other side, and Vilardi. Like, they had that goal, but the entire game, they were kind of just hemmed in their own net, and the top line for Colorado kind of had their way with them. Out of all the series, I got wrong on the Vegas one. This series kind of going exactly how I thought it would. Game 1 was, Georgiev was just horrendous.
Ooh.
I didn't think he'd be that bad, but he was really bad. And Colorado's going to score. They're the highest scoring team in the league for a reason, or one of the top scoring teams in the league for a reason. So they're going to get theirs. I think what's so frustrating for Winnipeg is that Hellebuck has just not looked good at all. So now you have a game where Georgiev is out playing Hellebuck. That's not going to win games for Winnipeg. They have to go back to their kind of, I mean, it's kind of like the same thing that the Kings are kind of going through. They just have to go back to their defensive kind of style of game if they're going to give themselves any chance of winning. Because the first game, they got lucky, I felt like, because of how bad Georgiev was. Yeah. They should have lost that game. Yeah. The second game, they did end up losing that game. And I think it was more because Hellebuck just didn't look good at all. So now, if this trend continues, I still think this series goes long, but I wouldn't be surprised if Colorado just ends up winning the next 3 games.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. So you said, though, something about how Winnipeg's got to get back to what, you know, the similar like the Kings. This is kind of what we've been talking about. Like, I don't know if that's going to happen, though. It's a new era. Defense doesn't win championships in NHL. I will put it out there and put my neck on the line. Now watch Winnipeg and LA win their series, and you know, whatever they're able to shut them down. But like, even look at LA, they won the game. They won it 5-4. Mm-hmm. You know, I was concerned that LA wasn't going to be able to score in this series. So far, they've scored a heck of a lot more than they did. They're not winning this game because of their stingy defensive play, because newsflash, defense doesn't win championships in the NHL anymore. You have to score these days. You have to. And I, to your point, Winnipeg scored because Gorgiev was terrible in the first game. Yeah, I just think Colorado's better. They're going home. I don't think Winnipeg's a bad team. You know, they're not like Washington bad, but they're just I just think Colorado's better. I think they're a well-oiled machine, especially if they got some guys. I mean, I don't know that Landeskog's ever going to be – I know he's skating around a little bit and, like, sweats, but they're good. Mittelstadt's been good.
Walker's looks really good.
Yeah. This is – it's a good team. I just think they're – I think that when they find – and, again, they lost solely because their goalie hung them out to dry. So I think they're going to win the series.
Up over in the Eastern Conference, or we got one more in the West. Vancouver, Nashville tied 1-1. Demko out week to week. Does this spell the end of Vancouver, or can they ride it out against the hot Nashville towards the end of the season?
Yeah, isn't it funny that it seems like the big storyline, at least out West right now, is goaltending in each series. I mean, like you said, Thompson's kind of carrying right now with Vegas, doing pretty well. We talked about the goaltending between the Kings and Oilers. The goaltending, obviously, with the Avs and the Jets. And now, man, Canucks are in a world of hurt because they weren't able to produce any offense. And if that's the thing with Nashville, too, is they're really stout defensive team, going to turn it into a crawl. We saw them play against the Kings where games were 2-1, just kind of lucky bounces here and there. So now, if they're not able to produce offense, and Elias Pettersson hasn't looked really good at all, and they're in Vancouver's in a big trouble.
I'm with you there, Russ. Pettersson's not – something's not, I don't know if he's dealing with something, but the Demko injury is big, and Pettersson being out – or not out, but playing as if he's out is certainly not good. So, I mean, a little biased. I do got a series bet on the Preds, so I am hoping that they pull it off, but –
If you're Kings fans, we're looking at the brackets, right? Kings somehow get past the Oilers. Want home ice advantage. You want the Preds to win.
Well, yeah, and it's you'd rather play either of these teams than have to deal with, like, somebody on the other side. So, yeah. Very, very true.
That's the thing that's kind of strange. Like, not strange, but it's gives you a little bit of a glimmer of hope. And I don't want to look past the Oilers. I'll stop doing it after this, but gives you a little glimmer of a hope, because if you look at the bracket and how the way it's set up, I mean, the Kings win, the next series would be either against Vancouver or Nashville, and you don't want to say you like your chances against any team in the playoffs, but kind of like their chances against both of those teams, especially with the Demko injury, and you get home ice advantage against Nashville. Then after that, you have who knows what's going to happen.
It would be Colorado.
Yeah, so but they'd have to eliminate either Vegas or Dallas. So they you're eliminated.
No, Colorado series is the next opponent for us if we win.
After the Oilers?
Yeah.
No, it's Preds. It's the Preds.
No, not according to the bracket I'm looking at on the website.
Am I wrong?
I thought it was Nashville.
I'm pretty sure it's Nashville.
Am I looking at it upside down? I am looking at it upside down. Okay. Yeah. So you're right.
Okay. No, yeah. But Vancouver, I'm just saying, like, the other side, too, like, you have three of the top four teams probably in the Western Conference in that other side of the bracket. So
now, I will say, just to play devil's advocate a little bit, if you're either Nashville or Vancouver, what do you think they're saying?
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Let's just find a way through this. And hey, man, LA, we may not have to play Edmonton. We might get LA. So, but you're right. I agree, though, Russ. You're right.
A team that doesn't look like it's going to give us home ice advantage in the Stanley Cup is Tampa Bay, down 3-0 to Florida. Florida is just a wagon, as they were last year, handling business. Not really much to say there. Tampa should put up maybe a one win. Let's move it to the next series here. Boston, Toronto, big series. Toronto hasn't won since early 50s, I guess, since against Boston in the playoffs. Down 2-1. Boston just seems to find a way to win, cycling the goalies, which hasn't really worked in any playoff instance, but they're doing it with both of theirs because they got some two A-plus goalies there. What do you feel about this series and how it's going so far?
I think Toronto's been pretty good. I actually think they've played this series pretty well. If it weren't for how well Swayman played in game one, I think it could have been a different result. It's just hilarious that Toronto is going to find a way to lose, I think, again. But, man, I don't think they've played bad. I really don't think they've played that bad. But Nylander out is just massive. I mean, I don't think he can be – he has been a horse in the playoffs for this team the last couple of years. And he's been their best playoff performer, I think, the last couple of years, has Willie Nylander. So, you know, it was mentioned today that he's suffering from migraines, I think Elliot Friedman reported. May or may not have been due to a concussion, which is kind of weird because he played every game. So when did this happen?
I think they said maybe the last game of the year.
I would hope it would have been in the last game that he wouldn't have played before that. So, that sucks, you know, for Nylander there and Toronto, because I hate to see them go down like without him, you know, that would suck. So hopefully he's able to come back, but I don't think Toronto's been that bad in this series. I know it's 2-1 Boston, but I feel like this one might go the distance. I can see Toronto winning game four, and then we'll see what happens last three.
Yeah, you mentioned the goalie rotation, Randon. I mean, I'd be kind of surprised if they kept going with the way that Swayman played in game three, because it felt like he kind of stole that game too. Because I agree with Joe, like, Toronto's looked pretty good. Auston Matthews, and the reason I picked Toronto in seven is because I felt that Auston Matthews would be show the world why he's one of the better players in the NHL. And he's kind of done that in this series, but he just really doesn't have any other help at this point. Mitch Marner. Hey,
where is Nylander?
He's hurt. He's in a migraine.
Yeah, William Nylander. He's hurt. So, but Mitch Marner is the one that needs to start showing up. Even though he had a pretty nice pass, get
some Midol there, Nylander, and let's get going. Come on.
I mean, concussions, man. That's different. It's tough to deal with at that point. So.
So it's a concussion, not just a headache.
Well, they say it might be based off a concussion.
Yeah.
So. Kind of a tough situation for him, especially with the contract they just signed. Hopefully he's able to come back, because I want to see Toronto at their best going up against Boston at their best.
Me too.
Because it'll be a fun series for everybody.
Yes.
All right. Well, we'll see. Going into the next series, we have New York Rangers up 2-0 against the Capitals.
Move on. Oh, terrible. These last two series. What are you going to say? The Capitals are one of the worst teams I've ever seen play hockey, and they're in the playoffs. It's embarrassing. The New York Islanders should have been relegated after game two when they got out a shot attempted by 100. These are bad hockey teams that should not be in the playoffs.
It wasn't as bad as Taiwan versus Kuwait in the World Championships. I don't know if you saw that.
This is true.
No, but it's like,
how 155 shot attempts to one.
What was the final score of that game? Wasn't it like something 55-0?
Yeah.
It's crazy. But like, that's what we were saying. Like, toward the end of the year, people were like, oh, this Eastern Conference playoff series race is the greatest regular season ever. I'm like, what are we talking about here? These guys are going to get run out the building against Carolina or New York. And sure enough, like, that's exactly what's happening. Like, we're really caring about whether it's going to be the Islanders or the Philadelphia Flyers. I mean, at least maybe the Red Wings would have given us a little bit of entertainment.
No, they wouldn't have.
Before, but even Pittsburgh, then, they're not.
Pittsburgh, I would have been intrigued about. I would have been intrigued about a Crosby, Malkin, Letang.
Oh, there you go. The Penguins would have been.
The Penguins, I think, could have been maybe intriguing. But everybody else was going to get their faces caved in.
Yeah, it's like so bad. Like, we wasted so much time talking about this Eastern Conference playoff race when none of those teams we're going to do anything. Even though, like you said, with the Penguins, it would have been fun, but there was no way they were going to win.
No, they would have lost. They would have lost.
The East has been so boring. Like, anytime these East games are on, I'm like, ugh. Like, today,
the only,
like,
Toronto, Boston is the only one I've enjoyed watching in the East.
Game three was a really good, entertaining game. It was a great game.
Well, maybe they'll add more to the World Championship rosters in May, coming up here with these fast exits out of the East side. The United States roster looks pretty good so far.
Really good.
So maybe we can add some more players there. Not going to get the Kachuk connection because Florida's up 3-0, but we'll see how that works out. Joe, you had words right here. You're holding them on. What's going on?
I just get the sense that we're probably winding down a little bit here toward the end of the show, and I just want to make sure that I say, because Bob Cole was incredible, play-by-play man, rest in peace. He, for years, did Montreal Canadiens, for years did Hockey Night in Canada. And like when I would get NHL center ice as a kid, when I made it a point to find, go through the games and just find whichever Hockey Night in Canada. I mean, I watched Hockey Night in Canada every Saturday that I could. And it was always Bob Cole. I made sure, like, if I could find the game that Bob Cole was doing, which was usually Montreal. Because I got into doing some radio stuff and doing some play-by-play stuff, and like he was one of the guys that I just genuinely loved listening to, and just an incredible voice. He didn't overdo it, right? He didn't. You see some announcers, they can get a little crazy with how they go, and he was just perfect. So, I know he's been out of it for a bit, retired and all that stuff, but he passed away. I think it was yesterday or today. So I needed to make sure that I said that, because man, I don't know if you guys listened to him much. But he was incredible.
No, well said. I didn't get to listen to much Bob Cole out here in the West, but
yeah.
Obviously still a big voice in the hockey world. You could just kind of feel the weight of that he carried, which, I mean, just kind of cruising through Twitter and seeing all the memories that people shared. Like, I saw one video where it was like he was, I guess, calling a Ducks game. And Snoop Dogg was like in the crowd and like passed it off to Bob Cole, and Bob Cole thought it was the most hilarious thing in the world. It was a great clip, but yeah, you can tell he was one of the more iconic voices.
Yes.
In the National Hockey League. So
yeah,
I mean, we're losing some good ones. I mean, Rick Jeanneret too, another one.
I know.
For voices.
Yeah, for sure. Because this era, because all these guys had a personality. You look at the Doc Emmerichs, Gary Thorne. I know Gary Thorne has been still doing, he does baseball now, but like he was so good. Rick Jeanneret had a personality. Bob Cole was a personality, and you don't see it as much these days. At least I don't think. I mean, maybe if I took a step back, maybe I would count like, okay, maybe there's more than I think of. But when I think of today's, play by play, I feel like it's a lot of guys that they went to school for it. So they were how to be a play by play guy. Where back in the day, those guys just they were able to get opportunities and work their way up. But now it's, I don't know how many of these guys, because you want to be careful with the personality. You don't want it to be fake. You want it to be authentic. You don't want to go over the top. So that can get tricky. But yeah, I mean, I would say like a John Forslund is somebody that's outstanding right now currently. But I think, it's a different era of play-by-play that we're getting into. And I don't know, for better or for worse, I guess it is what it is. But it's crazy.
One of the guys I really like is a guy you might not have heard of, but his last name is Faust. He does a pretty good job for calling the hockey games.
Yeah, he might get the Boston job. I'm hearing rumors that he might be the one to take over that Boston job.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Well, good for him is good for us in the couple of years that we've got to listen to him. And the hour you guys have gotten to listen to me and my co-host here ramble on about the Kings has come to an end. Thank you guys for coming in. Hit the like button on your way out the door. Get a good night's sleep, because tomorrow is going to be nerve-wracking for game three. Look at all of our articles here at Hockey Royalty at HockeyRoyalty.com. Please purchase your Let Kev Be Kev t-shirts, because we need all the Kev mojo that we can get going into the series. Guys, excellent show today. Thank you guys for coming on. I hope you guys enjoy your football picks there in the top 10 Still not sure what to make out of the pick that the Niners just made. I have to do some research there. Off to do that, and we're off with this show. Thank you guys for coming in, and as always, go Kings, go.